RexMuscle.com brings you Quantum Physiques, building strength and power for your mind, your body, and your spirit. Alternative medicine, muscle growth, mood enhancement, motivation, putting your mind at ease, harnessing your maximum potential. Quantum Physiques. Here's your host, Brian Cunningham.
Welcome to another episode of Quantum Physiques. I'm your host, Brian Cunningham, where we take the idea of no pain, no gain to a whole nother level. Who doesn't want to have unlimited power? I mean, we're all in the gym training because we want to get strong, we want to be powerful. But I mean, don't we all want to, in a sense, have the power of these mythic heroes we see in Hollywood films? Like, what's the one, Thor, that just came out? Or Neo in the Matrix? I mean, we're all really looking to have this power of a god, really, is what it comes down to. And, you know, Quantum Physiques is going to help you get there easier, because we're going to delve into what it means to really work with the quantum computer of your brain. I mean, get this, you know, quantum physics runs your life. I mean, from Hollywood films that derive a lot of their story from quantum physics, movies like The Matrix, Inception, The Terminator, you know, to technology, things like cell phones and computers. So much of your life is based around quantum physics. I think most of us just take it for granted. You know, it's so imbued in culture. Even Kim Kardashian is seen on a television commercial reading a book called Quantum Physics, which of course she never would actually read. Believe it or not, watching her on that commercial gave me the idea for naming the show Quantum Physiques. So, you know, this is really about taking that to the next level. I mean, really delving into, you know, working the most important aspects of our being, because, you know, for so many years, I struggled, I guess, to have a better life. I mean, I, you know, was in corporate America. I was stuck in a sense. And the only outlet I had was bodybuilding, was working out. It was like my coping mechanism. But then by the same token, you know, it was also in a sense a positive escape, and it helped me to deal with my stress in my life and helped me to, you know, to kind of just like feel good about myself in a lot of ways. But by the same token, it held me back to some degree too, because I focused on that too much. It was the one area of my life that I could actually control. And so because of that, I became like a control freak, you know, almost like I developed a career out of the whole thing. I became a fitness professional. I got into nutrition. It definitely served me, but I began to realize there were areas in my life that I was blind to, that I was not aware of, that I was hiding from in a sense. Bodybuilding was great, and fitness is great, and developing physical strength is great. But at this point in my life, you know, I'm tired of just peacocking, as Jeff Magic, who's going to be a guest on the show, believe it or not, will talk about. You know, it isn't just about looking good or looking in the mirror or feeling like I fit in. It's more really about developing my life in other areas. And that's what I want to share with you. And that's what I want the show to really drive home. We have some fantastic guests coming up. You know, bodybuilder turned motivational speaker Tom Terwilliger is going to be on. We have Gary Null scheduled coming up too. He's a infamous health guru. So, you know, the idea here is to really give you good quality guests and to make you think and to challenge what you normally accept as like your belief systems right now. Because I think that for all of us, if we can break out, if we can understand that in a sense, you're writing the entire story of your life. This is what quantum physics is showing us here, is that there is a multidimensional reality going on here. There is strange things going on a quantum level that are actually potentially going on in this level as well. And so this opens up a whole new paradigm in a sense that allows you to take control of your life in ways that really, like the movie Inception, becomes, can you live your dream? Because this is really just a dream within a dream within a dream anyway. And how much can you not just intellectually realize that, but actually live from it, have it be part of your core belief system? That's the thing. You know, I spend time reading all these books. I know what, you know, morphic resonance is and strange attractors, which is really the biological derivatives of quantum physics. You know, I know about entanglement and the fact that your brain's a quantum computer and it works in a nonlinear fashion. It's a, you know, quantum mechanical fluctuations in the microtubules is actually what gives rise to consciousness. These things are great. You know, it's great to understand this, but you know what? To actually integrate it into your life, to have it in a sense filter in and percolate into your subconscious and create a whole new you, That's what I'm talking about here, to really unleash the giant inside you, you know, to become that one, that the Neo in the Matrix really is the same story about, you know, who is that one that can rise above and be the one that succeeds and that can transcend this reality. And quantum physics is all about transcending this reality. And quantum physics is, again, about transcending your reality and making you have a better life. It's the kind of show that you're going to want to grab people that you care about, your mom and your pop and your significant other, and say, hey, listen, this show explains not only who I am and what I'm trying to achieve in my life, but it also can help you. It can empower you so you understand why exercise is so important and why, you know, building a life from the ground up is so important. Because listen, when it comes to digestion, what bodybuilder or athlete doesn't know the importance of a digestion? But how about our parents? My parents both are diabetics. They're both overweight. So, you know, these are important topics that I'm hoping we're going to expand and share with people, because really, you know, we are at the cusp of leading, I think, a revolution. I think that, you know, we are, in a sense, as Dan Millman would say, we're not just warriors, we're, you know, peaceful warriors or spiritual warriors, in a sense, because we're stepping up and we're willing to do what it takes to be successful. And this show is really dedicated to you to help you get there easier and with less effort. And that's really why the name Quantum Physiques is there. And, you know, if you have any questions or feedback, please get me on the rxmuscle.com forums. I'm more than glad to integrate some of your questions. We already got a thread going on the website, and it's great. People asking me about visualization, how it affects beliefs. And I think that's a great question, for example. I mean, you know, there's some amazing things. Kevin Trudeau, best-selling author of More Natural Cures Revealed, he is a questionable, or he is a controversial character. But, you know, he said some things that were life-changing for me. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you get the information from. It can be from the worst or the best person. It can be from watching a flower. I mean, there's a poem about, you know, a guy watches a flower and becomes enlightened. So why not? But, you know, Kevin Trudeau said, get this, every day, your reality is shaped by about 50 to 100,000 bits of data coming in. But your brain can only really perceive a slice of that, maybe 4 or 5,000 bits of data. So, you know, you don't really see other parts of reality. And in a sense, your belief system, which is shaped upon what you perceive, of course, doesn't also give you the full picture. So a lot of times when you have hopes and dreams or goals, and, you know, maybe the world around you makes you feel like you can't achieve them because of whatever self-defeating beliefs you have, like, you know, you're not good looking enough, you're not smart enough, you're not successful enough, you don't have enough intelligence, you had a low IQ score, your SAT sucked, you didn't get into the right college. You know, those beliefs really hold you back because they're only based on your limited perceptions. But when you realize that if you, in a sense, can step out and start just with blind faith, literally marching towards what your goals are in life, that the other unseen parts of reality, those other 45,000 or 90,000 bits of data or whatever, will start manifesting. They're already there. This is part of reality. This is not like you know, you're creating magic in a sense, but what you're doing is you're starting to march toward something, and your brain, being a quantum computer, is going to start pulling in these other bits of data to support you. And, you know, there's a saying, if you throw enough shit against the wall, it's going to stick. I mean, this is really based on quantum physics. You throw enough shit, you try hard enough at something, and some of it's going to stick. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to start basically eventually having a wall of shit. But that also, of course, is a metaphor for a wall of success, because you're really going to be more successful because you're going to create your own reality. And so this show is really about giving us all a reality check, because I think a lot of us are full of shit. We have self-limiting beliefs, where we're stuck in dead-end relationships and dead-end jobs, and maybe even dead-end in our progress in the gym, as an example. And, you know, what the hell's that all about? Why are we not making progress? It ain't because you're not taking the right chemicals, that's for damn sure. You know, so there's got to be a paradigm shift, and quantum physics is going to help you make that paradigm shift. I'm your host, Brian Cunningham. This is Quantum Physiques on rxmuscle.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
Quantum Physiques, building strength and power for your mind, body, and spirit. Shaker Pro has designed the most innovative shaker in the fitness and bodybuilding world.
Shaker Pro is the only shaker where the powder and liquid are stored separately and mixed together at the exact moment you desire. Mixing occurs in the closed Shaker Pro system. That means no more mess, just a perfect shake, guaranteed. Preparation takes place anytime, anywhere, in the car, at work, or in the locker room. No need to transport separate ingredients with you. The Shaker Pro is an all-in-one solution for everyone with an active lifestyle. The patented Shaker Pro chamber system guarantees that the mixing and blending of the ingredients will always produce a perfect shake every time. Simply twist, shake, and enjoy. Find out more about the Shaker Pro at 4sportlife.com. That's the number 4sportlife.com. Hydrolyze Ultra, the leader in cellular hydration water. Hydrolyze Ultra water has been designed by shrinking and reshaping molecules to allow a faster and more sustained delivery into your cells. Our cellular water has gone through a magnetism and laser treatment process, along with adding electrolytes to our special ingredients. This allows all nutrients to be absorbed at a maximum cellular state. By using Hydrolyze Ultra, all nutrients, supplements, and carbohydrates you consume will be absorbed at a greater rate. Lactic acid gets flushed faster, and you'll feel fully hydrated. Get the advantage that top athletes have achieved. Try Hydrolyze Ultra today. Visit HydrolyzeUltra.com. That's HydrolyzeUltra.com. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
And welcome back to Quantum Physique. I'm your host, Brian Cunningham. We have one of the secret gurus of bodybuilding on. His name is Dana Hauser, and he is an MD with an extensive background in biochemical research. Amazing guy. One of the secrets, best kept secrets in bodybuilding, I think. And he's going to tell you a lot of cool things I think most of you probably never heard about as far as supplement science, his opinions on cardio and things of that nature. In the news, I think this is kind of interesting, actually. It turns out Wiener shows his wiener, right? What was it? Representative Anthony Wiener of New York actually admitted that he lied. And, he actually posted on Twitter a picture of his wiener, which I think is funny, number one, because as we all know, Rome is burning. All around us, the big issues of a declining economy, our loss as a superpower in the world should be the main headline. And yet these little issues, maybe not little to Representative Wiener, but these little issues seem to take the headline. It's kind of funny because by the same token, Lady Gaga, obviously she reads Chomsky. She's a master of manipulating the crowd. I mean, really, her idea is to peacock. She is the grand master of peacocking. And later on in one of the shows, we're gonna have Jeff Magic, who you guys all know from being one of Dave Palumbo's friends. But Jeff is gonna tell you all about peacocking. But peacocking is a pretty interesting phenomena. It's a way, Lady Gaga talks about it as a way of basically keeping the public's attention or diverting their attention. You get the public almost like dangling a carrot and having them follow the story that you want them to follow. And the media does the same thing. The media keeps us focused on wieners, like Wiener's wiener, for example, while the serious issues, like what's really going on behind the scenes, which you can get on websites like Shadow Stats, which is one of these websites that does statistical analysis of the government's data to show you what's really going on. And it's pretty scary. Just so you know, I live in a town here. I used to be a fitness trainer. And a lot of my clients who are hedge fund owners, we're talking guys making seven figures, they're buying guns and gold. I'm not kidding. Even in the post office here, when I go down there, some of the people tell me, yeah, we get these big, heavy, little small packages coming in every day, and they know it's gold. So the reason why the price of gold has gone up significantly in the past like year from like $900 to $1,500 an ounce is because the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. The rich are realizing what's going on, and they're starting to move in that direction of buying more gold, buying guns, buying land, that kind of stuff. And again, this is all interconnected because, as Lady Gaga says, you keep the public's attention on something that isn't as important. Wiener, by the way, the guy's got a pretty good body. Got to give him props. I mean, besides the picture of his wiener, which I don't get why guys post that stuff, because like women don't really care about your wiener. I mean, really, honestly, in general, the only person who thinks you got a pretty wiener is probably you. But as far as Wiener's body, believe it or not, the guy's pretty buff. He works out. So he's obviously a bodybuilder, or he lifts weights at the very least. You got to give him props for that. But it's just kind of funny how these guys, what's so bad about posting your body on Twitter, really? I mean, is it really worth having such a debacle happen while the country falls apart? So one thing I wanted to get into today, excuse my voice. It turns out that I have a congestion. I have an allergy to dairy. I'm a big fan of raw. I eat my meat raw, my eggs raw, and I've been really drinking down a lot of raw milk recently, thinking it was actually healthy for me. But it turns out that it didn't work. I was trying to bulk up, and I was drinking like 3 gallons a week of raw milk, and ended up having a bad allergic reaction to it. Not bad, but I mean, I'm a little congested, so forgive me for that. So we're going to get our guest in the line here. Stay tuned. This is Brian Cunningham for Quantum Physiques, and we'll be back in a moment with our guest, Dana Hauser.
Quantum Physiques. Building strength and power for your mind, body, and spirit. Shaker Pro has designed the most innovative shaker in the fitness and bodybuilding world. Shaker Pro is the only shaker where the powder and liquid are stored separately and mixed together at the exact moment you desire. Mixing occurs in the closed Shaker Pro system. That means no more mess, just a perfect shake, guaranteed. Preparation takes place anytime, anywhere, in the car, at work, or in the locker room. No need to transport separate ingredients with you. The Shaker Pro is an all-in-one solution for everyone with an active lifestyle. The patented Shaker Pro chamber system guarantees that the mixing and blending of the ingredients will always produce a perfect shake every time. Simply twist, shake, and enjoy. Find out more about the Shaker Pro at 4sportlife.com. That's the number 4sportlife.com. Hydralyze Ultra, the leader in cellular hydration water. Hydralyze Ultra water has been designed by shrinking and reshaping molecules to allow a faster and more sustained delivery into your cells. Our cellular water has gone through a magnetism and laser treatment process, along with adding electrolytes to our special ingredients. This allows all nutrients to be absorbed at a maximum cellular state. By using Hydralyze Ultra, all nutrients, supplements, and carbohydrates you consume will be absorbed at a greater rate. Lactic acid gets flushed faster, and you'll feel fully hydrated. Get the advantage that top athletes have achieved. Try Hydralyze Ultra today. Visit HydralyzeUltra.com. That's HydralyzeUltra.com. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals, or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. Highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
And welcome back to Quantum Physiques. I'm your host, Brian Cunningham, and I am proud to present what I would consider to be one of the best kept secrets in bodybuilding, This guy is, I've been following him for a long time on bodybuilding.com, actually, where he had gained a lot of credibility for his intelligent posts. And we became Facebook friends, and I was busting his chops a lot, and he took it in stride. He's an MD, and just to let it be known, I don't have a lot of respect for most medical doctors because what they practice is not really what I would consider modern medicine. But this guy does. This guy is down hardcore in the biochemistry, and Dana Hauser is a respected educator in the field of endocrinology and hormone science. He's been internationally recognized for his understanding of nutritional biochemistry, and he consults with over 10,000 clients, patients, and doctors worldwide. And I think with over 20 years of experience in a variety of different areas, including life extension, sports nutrition, and dietary supplement development, he's a very well-versed individual in all this stuff, of course. And given his extensive or his impressive scientific background, the fact that he integrates nutrition and biochemistry into this makes him very interesting for me. And Dana, I hope you have a lot of patience because there's so much I want to get into with you. We're probably not even going to cover some of the areas that you're really known for, but we'll have you back on again just so you know. So forgive me in advance for taking advantage of you.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay. So let me see now. Where do I even start with this? This is like a smorgasbord here. First thing I want to talk about, Dana, is testosterone. As you know, the commercials now, never mind the fact that we live in a society where testosterone has been demonized on one side of the spectrum, but yet, the pharmaceuticals are now coming out with low T because of the fact that it appears that for men over 40, this may be a new pandemic. And a couple of questions here, Dana. Number one, is there good statistical evidence backing up the fact that male testosterone levels have declined over the past 20, 30 years? And also number two, for this specific audience, is how important is testosterone really to muscle building?
All right. So, I think that the data is very sound to suggest that testosterone levels certainly have been on the decline, and that's a decline that actually supersedes what we've known in the past. That to suggest that testosterone would decline at a rate, an average rate of about 10% per decade for guys past the age of 25 years old. Currently, however, there is a lot of discussion of things like endocrine disruptors and so forth, and a lot of entertaining pieces, at least, that come out in regards to whether we're becoming a more a feminine bunch, if you will. And as such, there are a lot of pathology or various disease states that are actually kind of becoming more prevalent, and certainly there are associations to be made with low levels of testosterone and said disturbance, disease state, if you will. One, probably the most prominent of said disease states is actually diabetes. People that have blood sugar control issues and so forth are certainly individuals that are obviously kind of screwed, for lack of a better term, on two body composition fronts, at least pertinent to the audience at hand. So, and again, the association goes, well beyond that. Cardiovascular illness and so forth is sort of on a significant rise, if you will. And for the longest time, we kind of, as you had suggested, bastardized testosterone for its placement. I think there's a little confusion that sometimes had between androgen use and abuse, and it's truly unfortunate. There's now so much said data that we have that'll actually suggest, it's the guys that are, the aged male, if you will, that suffer from a lot of these pathologic states, and sometimes it's not necessarily suggested as testosterone, but it's essential byproduct. I think oftentimes it was very easy to blame it on something, and by its byproduct I mean dihydrotestosterone or DHT.
Sure.
As men progress, in age, certainly there's a lot of discussion of, various hair pathology, in other words, alopecia or hair loss, and then subsequently to prostate issues. But given the data I've already kind of suggested here, whereas you see this, decrease in testosterone levels over time, we kind of have to rethink our suggested message, because it's, it's the aged male, the guy now who's already suffered, let's say, a 20 to 60%, or at least on the order of 20 to 60% decrease in testosterone levels, that's actually seen said ailments. I'm sorry, I've kind of talked a lot, but I actually forgot the second question you had there.
It's fine, actually. There was another guy from Life Extension, I forgot his name, he's another pretty well-known doctor, who's big on using testosterone for a lot of different pathologies. And one of the things he said that caught my attention that I want you to maybe to comment on is that, of course there's an age-related decline in testosterone as men get older. That's pretty much normal from here going back, centuries. But is there now, because of modernity, with, the idea of a more stressful environment, with the lack of our circadian rhythm, with the xenobiotics, with a more toxic diet like sugars and trans fats, do all these things in a sense work in synergy to cause, an acceleration of lowering testosterone for men? Do you think that this is a new epidemic, or is it just really typical age-related declines you're talking about?
Oh, goodness. We've pontificated for years. The problem becomes the study data. How hardcore are you to say that, we need a study to say that this is truly epidemic? I think many people would essentially justify, whether that be from personal use or otherwise, that as obvious, there's a lot of things that, or even if you take, let's say, the guy who's coming off of anabolic steroids, kind of now at a lower level of testosterone, they're certainly subject to many ailments. If we can kind of extrapolate that data and say, yeah, then disease states would essentially share that connotation, then we'd kind of have our match. And as such, you would assume that, hey, if we essentially returned testosterone levels to whatever normal level that is, then, as such, you'd also see declining rates of all these disease states. But, and I think that we actually have the first few studies that have been published with actual replacement of testosterone. Like I said, it's very hard to say that the data supports that if you're truly, looking at, evidence-based data that we do have, in trying to send this message that, hey, if we replace testosterone, then we're going to see better benefit. The issue that is at hand is that we've been so nervous to use this as an intervention strategy to see said outcome that outside of sort of this experiential role, I don't think you can say that there's eons and oodles and oodles of evidence, so to speak, at least evidence from a standpoint of literature, that will support that to the nth degree. And again, there's a lot of struggles with a lot of this. I don't want to be as wishy-washy as that may sound.
Sure.
But like I said, in fact, I believe it was just this past month's Diabetes Care Journal, which is actually a well-respected journal, that did actually have an intervention trial suggesting that replacement of testosterone at least saw benefit in that disease state. Again, so here we're splitting hairs and saying, is this going to essentially benefit all of the disease states that could potentially exist? Very hard, because we don't have the data there. But
sure.
I think in the same sense, too, there's a lot of interesting associations that can be made, and I don't think they could be overlooked. It's certainly time to start exploring these potential avenues as being, highly correctable by testosterone replacement. The Endocrine Society actually recommends replacing guys' testosterone levels to the mid-level normal. But again, a lot
600?
Of medical organizations. And what's that?
Like the 600 nanograms?
Right. You've got such a broad range. It's very hard, whereas some labs will actually suggest, testosterone levels as low as, 200 to levels as high as 1,200, and sometimes a little higher than that. Lab standards for hormones are different, dependent upon the lab. But when you've got such a wide range, and you've got relatively reserved medical organizations kind of saying, okay, well, we're willing to go and meet you halfway, but we're not willing to go beyond that point. Again, it's very hard to say that we have all the data we need, because there are a lot of people that are really stickler, and as you kind of suggested in the intro there, there's a lot of docs that would kind of sit back and say, well, wait a minute, show me something that says that this is going to be the case. And unfortunately,
sure.
If you won't let that happen, then it's very hard for me to show you said data. I think it's really becoming more and more something that we're actually seeing, at least in study and trial data, that I think anybody who's actually interested in testosterone, whether that be replacement or so on, I think should be excited, because I think this is a time where you're going to start seeing a lot more of that. And maybe we can get to the bottom line, whatever the answer, said
sure.
answer is.
Okay.
Just kind of an exciting time, I think, all around there. But
yeah, no, definitely. The second part of the question, and let's just answer this quickly so we can move on to the barrage of questions I have for you, is, given the cascade of events, the anabolic cascade that happens with exercise, the release of mechanogrowth factor, IGF, NGF, you name it, how important is testosterone, just out of curiosity, in that cascade? And the reason I ask is, I think I've seen studies in a rat model where, rats had significant hypertrophy. These were castrated rats, still had significant hypertrophy when exercised. And I'm just wondering what your opinion on that is quickly.
This is difficult. This is difficult because...
Okay. So we'll skip it.
You say, give me the long and short, so to speak, and I can say that's a qualified, it depends. There is so much that goes into that, from the order of, what diet said individual is undertaking and so on. The problem with exercise is that it is inducing a level of stress. Stress, as we know it, is associated with what we call eugonadal 6 syndrome or something that kind of approximates a sort of fasted state, a very stressful environment for the body.
Sure.
The body kind of sort of takes testosterone levels and they actually are on the relative decline with some types of exercise. I don't know that I can make your answer as short as you'd like it to be, because I think it's a very difficult question that you pose. While it sounds simple, perhaps on paper, there's so many variables that go into that type of exercise, type of diet.
Sure.
That the best I can say from a long and short standpoint is it's a qualified. It depends.
No, I understand. Well, given that the fact that most people in this country watch Jersey Shore, we got to kind of try to keep their attention span here, Dana. So we took on 10-second sound bites, buddy. 10-second sound bites.
Sure, sure.
I'm kidding. Listen, given a lot of fitness gurus, and I'm sure there's some of them on listening to this radio show, a lot of fitness gurus are kind of anti-supplement. They don't believe in quote-unquote popping pills, or they think maybe a lot of this supplement science is based on biased studies, which of course, to some degree, being human beings, we are all biased. But, can you address them with, because obviously you are steeped in the literature. There is quite a lot of science actually supporting the use of dietary supplements specifically for fitness and health and fitness. Can you just address that one in particular? Because I think it's a pretty
sure.
important point.
Yeah, in reality, there is always going to be the problem of said company investment or vested interest in supporting a study. You're not really going to have anything go to fruition if there isn't going to be an end point or a bottom line that's going to certainly benefit someone. The pharmaceutical industry is probably best suited for that. And there's probably, in some instances, i.e. creatine or beta-alanine or some of these things, whereas you probably have more data on hand than you do with certain types of pharmaceutical agents. So it would be hard pressed to get someone convinced that ingestion of whether this be in a particular extract, if you're talking an exotic herb, wouldn't produce some said results. Now there's some difficulty in the translation, and certainly supplement ads don't create an environment that will get everybody on board with that. But I think there's so much data for certain things like, you know, creatine or conjugated linoleic acid or so on. Sure. I mean, there's some agents that have sure hard-pressed, you know, studies behind them. It would be very, very hard-pressed for me to suggest that everything you should, you know, I think there, at the end of the day, there has to be some trust that goes to the researchers at hand. I mean, there are some pioneers in the supplement field or the supplement industry that go above and beyond what you're going to essentially see in mainstream dietary supplement sales. There's certainly many people where a lot of these studies will originate that don't have vested interest. Beta alanine probably and creatine are probably two of the better known agents to kind of have or boast that data, but
and then you have Dr. Bruce Ames, for example, right, who was a big fan of acetyl L-carnitine and ethylopoic acid for upregulating mitochondrial function, and there's somebody there who has no interest at all in selling anything.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's hard to look and say, hey, you know, all of these things don't. There's data that stares us in the face, and I can't, you've probably heard data come out of my mouth more times than any other word during this conversation, but, you know, I think any true scientist would kind of suggest data to be there, you know, show me the data really is the end result. And there's data on everything. And then there's data, you know, there's particular things that second as a pharmaceutical agent that certainly boast, you know, dietary supplement effects and so forth. I mean, you know, fish oil being a prime example or niacin or as you suggested, the alpha-lipoic acid. Now, granted, a lot of alpha-lipoic acid studies are actually administered IV, so it's very very tricky to translate said data. But higher doses, higher order doses of alpha-lipoic acid, and I'm talking racemic, so not all the different salts or isomers and so forth that are on the market, but basic racemic mixtures of that particular compound in general. Higher dose data is certainly there from an oral standpoint. So I think anybody who's hard pressed to believe such offering really probably can't boast themselves as a true scientist or at least a true researcher at heart. The data's there. I mean, it'd be hard pressed for me not to suggest some use of dietary supplements with probably most, if not all, of the clients that actually interact with me.
Sure. Good answer. We'll get back to supplements in a second, but you know, I have perused some of your writings, and you know, for anybody who's out there, if you want to Google Dana Hauser, you can get some of his interesting theories. One thing in particular, Dana, is that you're really down on cardio, and I just wanted to have you address that briefly because, as far as I knew, I thought, you know, especially with the you know, the high intensity type that upregulates, I guess, what's called EPOC, which is excess post oxygen consumption. You know, cardio does upregulate mitochondrial density, and we all know mitochondrial now is the buzzword in a whole bunch of different areas. Of course, especially for fitness, I think mitochondrial density is even good for powerlifters and bodybuilders because it helps them in a lot of different ways. Why are you so down on cardio, given its obvious benefit on mitochondrial density, for example?
So I'm gonna take a step back for a second here because you suggested myself to be down on cardio. I am.
Oops.
I am anti. Well, wait a minute. I am anti aerobic training when body composition is the goal. Okay, and not all forms of quoted cardio. You just suggested high intensity interval training. Not all forms of quoted cardio are aerobic. So we'll at least make that notation first.
Okay.
You know, when we compare the sprinter versus the long distance runner, you know, the sprinter, of course, being more active in a at least in something that would approximate perhaps high intensity interval training. You know, when you look at body composition from that standpoint, obviously, you know, most, if not all, I would probably anticipate all, would at least side with the physique of a sprinting athlete, you know, as opposed to a long distance runner.
Of course.
you know, you're talking about mitochondrial density, and it sounds counterintuitive, but when you suggest type 1 versus type 2 muscle fibers, type 1 muscle fibers are actually stimulated by aerobic activity. So we're going to kind of break it down very basic. Type 2 muscle fibers are stimulated by anaerobic activity. Anaerobic activity, as I've just suggested, is not simply suggest that you need to, you know, be lifting or throwing around weight in order to attain said result. High-intensity interval training would certainly, at least for a portion of said activity, fall in suit with activation of type 2 muscle fibers, and as such, increase the relative density of mitochondria. For the longest time, and it's probably because we could hook people up to treadmills and EKGs or, you know, electrocardiogram monitoring. For the longest time, it was always suggested that, hey, you know what, if you want to lose fat, you need one very important thing, and that said item is mitochondria, which makes sense. I mean, the mitochondria's reason for existence is really to take long-chain fatty acids sort of inside of its double membrane structure and kind of break them down so they can essentially be ultimately metabolized by the body. When you kind of consider those two muscle types, it is type 1 muscle fibers stimulated by cardio, or the generally considered cardio, the aerobic training. It is those kinds of muscle fibers that are stimulated by that activity. Now, the issue with that is those particular muscle fibers aren't subject to hypertrophy. So a type 1 muscle fiber doesn't really have a lot of give. It doesn't really kind of respond in exceeding fashion to growing bigger or getting bigger. So the number, the predetermined amount of mitochondria you have per volume type 1 muscle fiber is almost genetically predetermined, and it's not gonna amount to a lot over time. A type 2 muscle fiber, now subject very much so to hypertrophy, will actually see increased mitochondria number because of that growth and subsequent volume density, so forth. This could certainly be seen in the form of high-intensity interval training, but doesn't necessarily have to be. You're going to get the same kind of activation provided your type of exercise is appropriate. And by that, I'm going to even take another step back and say that, you know, the level, or the I shouldn't say the level, the term intensity is actually defined differently for aerobic versus anaerobic training. You know, anaerobic training or even weightlifting isn't defined by how fast you can go from, you know, the first exercise, the second exercise, third exercise, so on.
Sure.
But more so defined by how close you're lifting to your one rep max. So in order to, you know, activate said myofibrils and so forth and get that subsequent benefit from a body composition standpoint, you're going to actually kind of have to lift with more intensity by essentially lifting closer to your one rep max. So kind of almost starting high and going low, you know, and there's some central nervous system components that don't exactly always allow us to start high on that, at least in that notion. So you can't really start with your max lift and kind of go low in that regard. But there is certainly a pertinence to that. You know, somewhere along the annals of bodybuilding time, it got a little confused, I think, and people tried to make, you know, shorter workouts and so forth. And as such, they actually came up with circuit-style training, which kind of was, I guess, the best of both worlds. You know, kind of go fast between machine to machine to machine to machine. And as such, you know, maybe you'll get the benefit of the cardiovascular and subsequently get the benefit of the anaerobic style training and subsequent muscle fiber belly definition. It really doesn't translate that way. And of course, you know, when you talk cardiovascular, because a lot of people will, they'll say, well, wait a minute, what about my heart? Well, yeah, what about your heart? I'll put you underneath a 700-pound squat and you tell me what your heart's doing. You know, you get the same benefit. You know, it's very interesting that's even used, because if you're actually moving from a standpoint of heart, the things that we usually talk about is cholesterol and blood pressure, and it takes anywhere from, you know, 9 to 14 miles per week to actually make some cardiovascular change. So you're probably not going to see huge benefit by the cardio that most people are doing.
Sure.
I guess that's the bottom line to it. You know, that there's some misnomer that exists, not at anyone's fault. I mean, they're reading the articles, they're doing everything else, but it's almost a faulty interpretation of what the data tells us. So I'll kind of
Quick question about that guy doing the 700-pound squat on his heart. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that the type of adaptation the heart underwent for heavy weights was sometimes actually not very healthy for longevity. Is that incorrect? Maybe left ventricle thickening, something along those lines. Can you just quickly elaborate on that for me?
Yeah, you know, yes and no, okay? A guy who harbors high blood pressure, yes, they're going to have left ventricular hypertrophy. Why? Or thickening, if you will. Why? It's because you're kind of, you're pumping blood at a faster rate against a sort of a higher force. You know,
sure.
it's that guy who maintains a high level of blood pressure at baseline who's going to see that result. So that's not necessarily the case with, you know, there was actually a suggestion that, you know, hey, you have a predetermined number of heartbeats in your lifetime. And that's nice because now I'm thinking to myself, good grief, you know, I'm certainly raising those said number of heartbeats with the exercise and the working out that I do. But at the end of the day, barring all adaptation has been appropriate, you're actually going to see a lower baseline level of heart rate, so your number of beats will actually slow down while you're not lifting said weight. If that doesn't happen, again, the guy who comes in with high blood pressure at baseline, that's where you see a lot of that adaptation. And unfortunately, I can't really tell you as to whether or not that would have happened without the lifting. It just so happened that the lifting almost got lost in the shuffle and is almost a confounding variable.
Sure. So just quickly to sum it up then again, what type of cardio do you have your clients doing basically? Can you just give me a quick outline of what you would say would be generic umbrella cardio program for a week?
Sure. From a cardiovascular standpoint, I will have people do on the days that they do lower body work, in other words, say leg day, it actually turns into an upper body cardio. So a time alternative in the day, most people are doing, let's say, dumbbell, you know, swings of some sort, or, you know, tire, like there's some alternative to what's being done low body.
Sure.
You know, whatever the quote unquote anaerobic training is, yeah, they're doing the opposite.
Okay.
It's not to suggest that I won't have them on a treadmill on a day that they're doing upper body, but there is usually some level of resistance that's applied to that scheme, i.e. inclines, or, you know, maybe they're getting on a stair mill or something along those lines, and the intensity level is certainly high. I don't know that I'd call it high intensity interval training, but it would probably be closer to that than it would be a long distance run.
Okay, so you want them to go anaerobic to some extent, right?
Sure.
Okay, there you go.
Yes.
And also, how many times a week, and how many minutes per session? I mean, you can just give me rough numbers.
Okay, yeah, and again, with this, I'll say for most people, because it depends on so many variables, but so yeah, I mean, for most people, you know, you're probably doing well from a standpoint of anywhere from 3 to 5 days. There are people who are certainly more. I hate the term endomorph, ectomorph, all that, because it sort of says you're subject to your own genetic makeup, as opposed to being able to alter that. So I really don't like or don't care for those terms. But the guy who's metabolically efficient, the guy who's kind of the hard gainer, the prototypical quoted hard gainer, would be a guy who would probably benefit from, you know, 3 days, maybe 20 minutes. Whereas the individual who's more that long since suggested endomorph, or at least in my regard, metabolically inefficient, those people would probably benefit at least from the 5 days. Whether that be 20 minutes or longer is of debate. I don't know that I have them doing activity. Usually when they're doing activity with me, 20 minutes will, you know, potentially put some in the hospital. So we kind of keep it to some level of limitation on the upper end. I mean, I don't have them doing 2 hours a day, 1 hour weights, and then 1 hour of some cardiovascular activity. But but it certainly does minimally approximate about 20 minutes.
Okay, interesting. Now, one thing I believe you and I both are a fan of is the amino acid L-carnitine, specifically, I guess, its variants as seen with acetyl L-carnitine, L-carnitine L-tartrate. I don't know if you want to give me a quick synopsis of what you think. I mean, obviously, I'm interested in it because I know acetyl L-carnitine specifically upregulates, I think, nerve growth factor in the brain, which, of course, is involved in HPTA, which for guys is very important, hypothalamic pituitary testicular axis, of course. L-carnitine L-tartrate, as you and I both have discussed before, supposedly upregulates androgen receptors, which also is an important thing for men as well. You want to give me a quick overview on what you think about L-carnitine and what kind of dose people should be considering?
Yeah, I mean, myself, I probably use more than the average individual. In other words, I'm using 3 grams of L-carnitine L-tartrate, 3 grams of acetyl L-carnitine, and 3 grams of propionyl L-carnitine over the course of a 24-hour period. Do I necessarily suggest that for everyone? Not necessarily. I think L-carnitine is something that you're probably going to see benefit from the base structure, the L-carnitine molecule itself, rather than the actual salt, the ester, sure, the attachment. So, for instance, L-carnitine L-tartrate, it's certainly it's the salt ester of tartaric acid. So it's more a sort of a constituent that suggests that there'd be predilection for androgen receptors and so forth, whereas you've already talked about acetyl L-carnitine and the HPTA. I'm not necessarily a fan of the HPTA nomenclature, but HPGA in my notation, because it's the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis as opposed to testicular, giving credibility to the thyroid axis, which also kind of has to be talked about in body composition analyses. But in any event, there is suggested predilection for central nervous tissue and so forth with the acetylated form, and then, of course, cardiac tissue with the propionyl form. Is the data 100% sound? No, it's just that they haven't really studied the alternative salts for the alternative end result or the alternative end product of what you're trying to accomplish. So I think, honestly, fair is taking L-carnitine of some form at probably 3 to 5 grams for most 170 to 200 pound athlete daily is certainly fair.
And some type of antioxidant to help, Dr. Bruce Ames, again, who's famous for the Ames test, was a big fan of alpha-lipoic acid and L-carnitine. But he said that, the L-carnitine makes your mitochondria run hot, so you're going to get a lot more free radical generation. You want to have like an antioxidant that can quench those free radicals like alpha-lipoic acid. Do you also recommend some type of adjuvant antioxidant therapy to modulate the free radical generation?
Sure. I mean, here you got a situation where you're talking about that output. As we've suggested already in this discussion earlier on, mitochondria's responsibility is really to kind of break down fatty acids. And as such, you're certainly going to have, I mean, the metabolic notation is certainly oxidation. Sure. And certainly antioxidants or something that opposes that is certainly ideal. Has it been proven? Again, there's a situation whereas at least it makes good sense on paper. And I don't know that there's any rationale I would ever suggest anybody who is either involved in working out or a healthy lifestyle to not engage in some use of antioxidants. So, I mean, it should already be part of your said supplemental plan, whether that be, alpha-lipoic acid or an alternative antioxidant offering. That's unbeknownst to me. I mean, I don't know that I can suggest everybody is fully equipped to be using the oral doses of some level of acetyl L-carnitine that's usually required for that. Sometimes in excess of 1,200 plus milligrams a day, when you translate the IV or intravenous data, that's a tricky notion. But I think that antioxidant ingestion is certainly something, like I said, that everybody should partake in some level of antioxidant realm. So.
Okay. You know, one thing I want to call you out on, and of course, I mean that in jest, is this idea of proven. Now, you know, I do have a background in science myself, not quite as well versed as you are, but I worked in pharmaceutical research. And, you know, this idea of proven, for example, the recent debacle with bisphenol A, EPA came out and said it was safe for a long time. And then, and meanwhile, other countries had data showing, you know, cumulatively that this stuff is more and more dangerous than we previously thought. For example, even small amounts would have a hermetic effect. Like, in other words, like very small amounts, I think, could have a, you know, maybe weren't that dangerous or were very dangerous. I forgot what it was exactly. But then the EPA came out recently and says, hey, you know what? Actually, yeah, maybe we kind of need to revise or revamp our opinion on this. It is kind of dangerous. And so, you know, the one thing that people who are like yourself and I tend to get steeped in is this idea of being proven. When, for example, you know, 20 years ago, I was taking, say, like a multivitamin. Now, I don't want to get into your opinion about multivitamins because, you know, that's a whole other tangent there. But just my point here, though, is that, you know, the medical community took 20 years before they began saying, yeah, you know what, multivitamin might be good, or maybe vitamin C might be good. And so, you know, for me, it's like if there's biological plausibility or if there's enough animal data, for example, you know, guys like me that I consider maybe a little more on the cusp and trying to integrate these new understandings before it's too late in my personal lifetime, you know, is that an inherently flawed way to look at things? I mean, you know, to me, it seems like it makes a lot of sense, actually, that the mainstream, the institution in a sense, right, like the church and the political institution and also the mainstream medical institution, they're kind of very slow. They're cumbersome in their ability to adapt and change fast enough with the barrage of information coming in. So does that make sense to you? I mean, are you following what I'm saying here about the fact that I'm a little bit of, you know, the mad scientist?
Show me 10 studies that suggest one thing. I'll show you 10 that suggest the opposite.
I'm sure.
You know, I mean, things that we were preaching, you know, X years ago, sure. I mean, 20 years, let's say, are certainly long since either proven, disproven, et cetera. And you know, I think there's many flaws to the concepts of making everything evidence-based. Because even, you know, each said study has limitations. I think when I suggest the data or suggest, you know, the support and so forth, number one, you'll never hear me suggest proven in a way that says, hey, this is without a shadow of a doubt the thing, the end-all, be-all answer. But usually best supported, and it may be more appropriate of a terminology if we're going to split hairs, you know, the term may very well come up, whereas better supported, well supported, more supported becomes more appropriate. There's a significant suggestion that you know, you have data or support or proof, and something certainly is stronger than the next. I don't think it's inappropriate to say that, but at the same time, sure, you know, there is probably a hell of a lot of problems saying that this is, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, the answer. So yeah, I don't think what you're suggesting is wrong, insignificant, etc. And a lot of people, you know, come down to personal choice as to whether or not they make said changes at the end of the day. You know, I mean, I could give you the positives and negatives to everything, and there are positives and negatives to everything, inclusive of ingestion of any said product or agent. You know, I mean, you just got to kind of weigh those risks and benefits. So, I mean, I think that's really the pertinence of what's being discussed. I mean, is it something where the risks outweigh the benefits? Then, you know, maybe it's better left not done. But I think a lot of times people have issues seeing the forest or the tree, and this becomes more of a situation that if I see one positive study that suggests something, that doesn't mean I jump on the wagon of this and that and say, oh, all of a sudden, wait a minute, this is the way I need to see this particular topic. No, you know, just because I saw it on Katie Couric does not necessarily mean that, you know, this is the way things are, the end-all, be-all. So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what you're saying. I completely agree with what you're saying. So, you know, again, probably better left at better supported or more supported than it is proven.
Okay, great. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to open up a Pandora's box with Dana. We're going to get into the thyroid gland. He brought it up. I want to ask him some questions. So stay tuned. We'll be right back, and we're going to get into this magical Pandora's box called the thyroid. Stay tuned. One more. We'll be right back.
Quantum Physiques, building strength and power for your mind, body, and spirit. Shaker Pro has designed the most innovative shaker in the fitness and bodybuilding world. Shaker Pro is the only shaker where the powder and liquid are stored separately and mixed together at the exact moment you desire. Mixing occurs in the closed Shaker Pro system. That means no more mess, just a perfect shake, guaranteed. Preparation takes place anytime, anywhere, in the car, at work, or in the locker room. No need to transport separate ingredients with you. The Shaker Pro is an all-in-one solution for everyone with an active lifestyle. The patented Shaker Pro chamber system guarantees that the mixing and blending of the ingredients will always produce a perfect shake every time. Simply twist, shake, and enjoy. Find out more about the Shaker Pro at 4sportlife.com. That's the number 4sportlife.com. Hydrolyze Ultra, the leader in cellular hydration water. Hydrolyze Ultra water has been designed by shrinking and reshaping molecules to allow a faster and more sustained delivery into your cells. Our cellular water has gone through a magnetism and laser treatment process, along with adding electrolytes to our special ingredients. This allows all nutrients to be absorbed at a maximum cellular state. By using Hydrolyze Ultra, all nutrients, supplements, and carbohydrates you consume will be absorbed at a greater rate. Lactic acid gets flushed faster, and you'll feel fully hydrated. Get the advantage that top athletes have achieved. Try Hydrolyze Ultra today. Visit HydrolyzeUltra.com. That's HydrolyzeUltra.com. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. Highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Welcome back to Quantum Physiques. I'm your host, Brian Cunningham, and we're here with Dr. Dana Hauser, who, again, is one of the best-kept secrets in bodybuilding. The guy is unbelievable with his knowledge in supplements and nutrition and biochemistry. And also, just a quick note, he is an avid lifter bodybuilder, and I believe even your fiancé also looks like a fitness buff. Is that correct, Dana?
That's true. She just recently did very well in her first fitness competition. So, awesome. Yeah, we're proud on that end.
Congratulations. You know, one thing you mentioned before the break was Katie Couric, and I just wanted you to elaborate. There was a recent, I guess, news bit about niacin increasing the risk of stroke based on some data extrapolated from some study. Could you just quickly comment on that, since it is a news piece that is probably in the mainstream right now circulating?
Yeah, I'm actually getting quite a bit of backlash in regards to some of my previous recommendations on use of niacin. Unfortunately, the quoted or so-called Aim High study, actually combined niacin with statin use. Statin, for those that aren't privy, are sort of the drugs employed by most medical doctors in regards to any kind of elevation or derangement, let's say, in cholesterol. The recommendations previously made are intact, and this trial did not necessarily phase them. I think that a lot of the data here was premature in the way people are suggesting it. I mean, the people that were in this particular trial were people who had some pre-existing cardiovascular disease that were well controlled on simvastatin or some statin drug, and as such considered, quoted, non-acute. You know, for the longest time, we know that increasing levels of LDL or lethal or bad cholesterol, and that's usually the way I'll remember it, is lethal. The bad stuff is actually, for best word, associated with cardiovascular disease, and the data is pretty significant. The contrary is true, whereas increased levels of HDL, or helpful cholesterol, are actually cardioprotective or cardiovascular disease protective. And neoniacin is actually one of those things that actually does a good job at raising the good or the helpful, the HDL, the good cholesterol, if you will. And it does to a very, very lower degree actually help lower some of the those lethal or bad particles. But anyway, the issue with this particular study is that there was a difference in stroke, and so I've got a lot of people actually emailing sort of angrily suggesting, hey, wait a minute, you know, I just heard on Katie Couric that there's an increased number of strokes with people that use niacin, and that's kind of a little bit far-reaching, I think. Even, you know, I think that the medical doctors out there that are big into lipids or cholesterol are kind of reevaluating their opinions and thoughts, and I think, you know, a lot of that has to be talked about. You know, I don't think that the small number of increased or higher number of strokes seen in this niacin group it can fully be explained by just saying, hey, you know what, we have someone on niacin, therefore they're going to have a stroke. You know, I think that we need to sort of reevaluate. You know, oftentimes we kind of come prematurely, and as we kind of talked about also in previous, is actually that notation of kind of not seeing the forest through the trees. I don't think that the number of stroke seen could actually be not considered to be either due by chance or, you know, related directly to the niacin or some other issue. I think that some people also need to note that this number of increased strokes has actually included a patient number out of that group that actually the strokes happened after they stopped the niacin. So, you know, and I'm using niacin interchangeably with the drug Niaspan, which was actually used in the actual study, but it's just not consistent with what we know about niacin or Niaspan's actions. I mean, we know that it's a vasodilator. We know that it has a good effect on not making a lot of the blood essentially sticky. It actually helps do some things to the platelets that are a little bit maybe above and beyond the discussion here to really sort of delve into that.
But sure.
You know, and it's anticoagulative, so it doesn't make people prone to stroke. Other things that we know is when people have decreased levels of HDL, the thing that niacin works to increase are actually, you know, they're actually at increased risk for stroke. So and we have many studies that have predated this particular study. For some, you know, the Copenhagen City Heart Study and Israeli Ischemic Heart Study, a number of studies that kind of go completely against what this one has suggested. We also know that the converse is true. If you have increased levels of HDL, again, you know, niacin works to do that. Actually, suggests decreased risk of stroke. And so, you know, and again, one of the things that we're also kind of not taking into consideration is that there's been post-marketing data with over 6 million patients, you know, and just years upon years of data there that were, you know, going to suggest that this one, I can't even call it a negative trial, but this one trial that was
sure
prematurely stopped, in my estimation, is really associated with that. So, you know, I mean, and one of the things, too, that people need to be kind of having in the back of their mind is that we use a number, a point, in how we judge a treatment effective in saying, well, you need to treat X people in order to save one life. or what have you. So the number needed to treat to see some cardiovascular benefit with the use of a statin drug is actually 95, whereas the number needed to treat to prevent some level of stroke or brain issue actually is 735. So just putting a particular agent on board that's going to affect cholesterol at baseline isn't going to do a great job at prevention of strokes, at least not in the data that is available to us. You know, some of the people that I'll get are people that are coming off of, let's say, an anabolic androgenic steroid cycle, who see the derangements that are pretty well known with usage of said agents. And as such, the thing that people don't take into consideration is that anabolic steroid use is actually something, whereas this upregulation of cholesterol is actually in line to get your testosterone levels back to normal. Being the precursor. So cholesterol is kind of like this beginning point for, you know, all hormonal synthesis, really. And really, you have to kind of take that into consideration. I don't think that you've heard the last of this, and I certainly don't, at least at this point, suggest any changes to be made from any recommendations that have been had, because it's just too premature. Oftentimes we'll kind of do analyses upon analyses upon analyses of the said data to come back to the same result, the same end result that says, oh, wait a minute, we were actually wrong in our first interpretation, so, you know, this is kind of the way this should have been interpreted. It's an important point that I don't think that there is any reason for alarm, at least at this point, if you are taking niacin. In fact, most people, my suggestion is literally to take, without cholesterol issues, 2 grams per day.
2 grams? Wow, okay, that's a high amount.
2 grams per day of nicotinic acid, right. A lot of people say, well, wait a minute, what about liver health and all that? Usually you don't see too much issue with that in numbers under 4 grams. So there's certainly a lot of room to roam, but the cholesterol benefits that you're going to see are usually modestly at about 2 grams a day, and it certainly wouldn't change, you know, the alternative things that I would suggest for most people is, you know, 2 to 4 grams of omega-3, you know, in combination with that for people, again, without cholesterol issues. So, sure.
I mean, you know, Dana, one thing I want to ask you about, though, isn't the whole cholesterol paradigm really suspect? I mean, there's been a lot of books out now by respected people in academia, you know, questioning the validity of the whole cholesterol paradigm. And, you know, maybe quickly we can cover that. What is your opinion on that, if you have one?
Well, have we prematurely jumped? It's interesting that we suggested earlier, too, that, you know, our thought process of 20 years ago is different today than it was then. Cholesterol levels were actually higher, let's say 20 years ago, and recommendations were higher before the advent of these said statin drugs. And as such, there was the suggestion that, hey, if we lower this and lower these limits that we use, then we'll get better results, better end product, better results, better cardiovascular, which at the end of the day, I mean, it really comes down to that mortality data and cardiovascular and even cerebral or central nervous system style mortality effects, because at the end of the day, that's really what it is. It's about, you know, deaths and illness, really. At least in that particular notation, we lowered the cholesterol limits, and unfortunately, the risk of dying from cardiovascular disease actually went up. So a little bit unbeknownst, unfortunately, there are so many confounding variables to that.
Sure.
The data I've already suggested, you know, diabetic males, are these guys somebody that you actually want to put on a statin? Whereas most diabetics, I think current recommendation would suggest, you know, if you're a diabetic at baseline period, you're going to be put on this particular agent. But at the same sense, I mean, are we, at the end of the day, sacrificing levels of testosterone, which are also known to be, you know, associated with increased levels of cardiovascular and you know, death and dying, so to speak, and disease, you know, process. Are you sacrificing
in a
that?
Positive way, of course?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so I mean, here we're, you know, we're potentially putting something on board that at the end of, you know, it's decreasing the level of cholesterol. That's fine, but it's also decreasing, as a result of that, the level of testosterone, which is also a problem.
Yes, exactly.
And you know, it's not accounted for. So I mean, there's some inherent issues that exist with that. Again, exciting time for cholesterol too. I think the aged male is really sort of at this point. I mean, here we are 20 years after the Women's Health Initiative, and we're left without a male counterpart, really. And studies really looking into the inherent illnesses that are really designated overtly male have not adequately been studied. It's really one of those conundrums that just is pretty unfortunate. I think we're starting to see some of that. You know, you can talk about the campaigns about testosterone and so forth that exist now. It's encouraging. I think that there is something to be said about, you know, the dynamics of exercise, diet, you know, vitamin D, huge. Cholesterol, and then testosterone levels or hormonal levels. So all of which I think are part of the sound thing, and I don't think you can completely look at one without somehow impacting another, and you kind of have to look at everything as a whole. And I think that's really where our problems are going to probably stem once at the end of the day, when all the dust settles and clears, I think that it's going to be that we were affecting one, thinking we were doing great things, but unfortunately that had almost this domino effect and said other things that it became
of course
a problem in and of its own right. So
it's like you were saying, 20 years ago, I guess it was the dawn of menopause and all those things that affected women, and now we have, of course, the dawn of menoporsche, which is a bunch of old fat guys in Porsches because they're going through andropause, and the way
right.
they make up for their flagging masculinity is with a hot red Porsche. So
yeah,
we call it menoporsche,
yeah.
But they're all candidates for someone like you, Dana, I'm sure. So anyway, we're running out of time, unfortunately. We're going to have to leave the thyroid to the next show. There's so much I want to get into, Dan. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. So we're going to have you back again. I'm sure you don't mind. So once again, Dana, I want to thank you for your time. Dana Hauser, MD, guys. Dana, what's your website if people want to go there and get some more information?
I mean, you have medicalmuscle.net at present.
Okay.
Medicalmuscle.com had some viruses and so forth, but it'll probably both will actually be active in the near future, but medicalmuscle.net at present is where we're kind of stationed. So.
Okay, great.
And then they also have leanbox.com. There's actually a forum, too, for alternative questions, and you can see a whole slew of previous questions and so forth. So.
Okay, that sounds great. Once again, I want to thank Dana. This is Brian Cunningham signing out for Quantum Physiques. Until next week, stay healthy and keep it real, baby.
Quantum Physiques with Brian Cunningham is dedicated to harnessing the power of the holy grail of health, fitness, lifestyle, and success. And you'll hear Quantum Physiques every Wednesday evening only on RxMuscle.com.